Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Fanny Crawford and
Stosh Siokowski.
Woohoo! It is Monday, June 8th. I got a number right.
Yes, you did.
Our theme today is a special gift, and we have some special stories to illustrate a special gift. Are you ready for that topic, Stosh?
I better be.
I know you are. Even if you weren't, you would be fine.
My sales experience would help me, I guess. We were just talking about sales,
Electrolux, but vacuum cleaners and Fuller brush guys.
Yeah.
That's a different topic for a different
right. Yes.
So what's your update, Stosh?
Well, I had a great meeting on Saturday with the person who has been, Carrie Estelle from the library here, the lady who's a children's librarian. She has been marshaling me through the summer reading program committee in Washington County. She has been my champion. And I was initially hired to do 7 of the 8 libraries. The 8th one kept not making the meeting, so they decided they just let that one go. And but now, because of COVID, all this, there are not going to be any in-person library storytelling this summer. They're going to do it like we're doing it now, Zoom or something. And for a while, I was still prepared to do 8 different performances or 7 different performances. But over the weeks, they changed and changed and changed. And they asked me if I would agree to do 1 performance in June, 1 in July, and 1 in August, and have it would be done as a Zoom. And they would then put it out to the libraries so that all the libraries could get my storytelling each month and decide to use it if they wanted to or not that way. And that would say I wouldn't have to travel, just do it here at home. So I said, sure, I'm easy. I prefer this because I had a better idea than doing what the original thing was. So now I'm going to be doing, are you all right with me explaining this?
Yeah, so you're talking about 3 different shows, 3 different programs. Okay.
And the first one is going to be about Sleeping Beauty. And for each one, I'm going to do 3 stories. And for Sleeping Beauty, I'm going to do the original according to the Brothers Grimm. And, that's not necessarily the original, but it's regarded as one of the first stories of Sleeping Beauty. Then I'm going to do the Hungarian version of a tale called The Princess in the Shroud, about a princess who is a Sleeping Beauty. And that has a much different ending, and it's a much different story. And then the third story I'm going to tell is about a woman by the name of Sarah Scantlin, who was in a coma for 20 years and a couple of months, and who woke up and began talking with great difficulty because she hadn't used her voice for 20 years. Her muscles were locked in many places of her body, joints frozen and things. But it's about her and her parents and her best friend from sixth grade, who for 20 years frequently traveled from her home, which was hours and hours away, to sit by Sarah's bedside. And finally, in 2005, during at a visit, when she walked in, Sarah said, "Hi, Lori." And it was very emotional. I watched the video, a number of videos about her, and it was very emotional for her friend and for Sarah. And she was amazed when Lori said, "You look old." Or when she said to Lori, "You look old." And Lori laughed and said, "So do you, dear." You know, but it's a great story. And so for each of those performances, I am going to do two fairy tales on the topic and a third tale that's true, modern day. And so that one, the second one, is going to be The Ugly Duckling and Beauty and the Beast. That'll be in July. And then the real story will be about Wonder. I don't know if you've read that book or seen the movie.
No, but I've heard about it.
There's this wonderful, wonderful young boy. It's a true story. Who has some facial features that are disturbing. And so it's about him being accepted with some difficulty into school. At first he was homeschooled for a while, but then he wound up going to school. And it is about, you know, that whole business of the ugly duckling. And, so there are two fairy tales and then a real story. Plus, I'm going to use my accordion for The Ugly Duckling, which was very exciting to the librarian. So
that would be exciting.
Yeah.
I get excited whenever you play the accordion.
Yeah. The last one is Jack and the Beanstalk, and I'm going to do a number of versions of a number of Jack stories in that. And talk about the place in Virginia, in Southern Virginia. There is a college that has a 50-foot wall based on a story, fairy tales, and it's called the Jack Wall. And my wife and I have visited it, so it's wonderful. And so I'm all excited about working on those. I've got the first pretty much finished. And I'll be doing it. I'm going to be doing that next week sometime. And I'll be doing it here from home. So it's like it's a new, that's a strange way to say it, but it is kind of like a new world. Because, you know what it's like. Telling a story to a screen is much different than telling a story to a bunch of faces, even if they're ignoring you. you like the audience, you like to see people.
There's something about being ignored virtually that's just
awful.
Yeah. Yes. Devastating. Like,
that girl should put down her phone. You know. So anyway, and I had a wonderful week also with my rockets. I rescued the rocket that was eaten by the tree in front of the house.
All right. You got it back.
And I did some adjustments to it. I put new fins on it. And I devised a new parachute compartment for the rockets. And a couple of days ago, I did a beta test, is that what they call it?
Mm-hmm.
I did a test, and it worked beautifully, and I put a the short video of that out, and people who had been following my adventures with the Rockettes were really happy for me. And so anyway, that's going real well. And as soon as I can find out if I can go to the ball field here, I don't know if they're closed, if the gate's still locked. It was locked for a while. My wife was going to go with me to one of the fields because I want to increase the pressure that I'm using from 60 pounds to 100 pounds per square inch. I'm getting a rocket to go quite high with 60 pounds per square inch, and I want to see if I can get it even higher.
So. And you're going to be careful that you're not standing under it this time when it comes down.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure I'm not facing the sun. What happened on that flight was I looked up and the sun was blinding, and so I put my head down, and you know, and I had no idea where the rocket was until my wife said something, I guess. And yeah, I wouldn't want to get hit in the head with one of those things, even though it's just plastic bottles.
Could do some damage.
Well, damage the rockets each time. Smash. You
know, I was worried about your head.
Oh, a lot of people would tell you one more hit in the head would probably fix them. So
there you go.
You know.
So be careful.
Yeah, so
maybe you can wear a helmet.
Yeah.
Make it your rocket helmet.
Yeah. No, I don't think I want to become Rain Man.
Even more legendary.
So, yeah. I had a number of my former students wrote and mentioned. They were glad to see their old teacher still playing.
And, that's good.
And I did say on one of my posts, and it's incredible. I feel so lucky that at my age, I can still play and I enjoy it so much. So
consider the helmet. Okay. I forgot to thank Andy Offutt Irwin for playing Terry here for us at the beginning of the show. You would think that after 3+ years of opening the show with Terry here, that I would remember right away.
But it's okay. John will put it on and it'll be perfect. The broadcast will work.
We still need to thank him. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you,
Andy. For giving us permission.
Right.
Is there anything else you want to say before I tell the story?
Tonight and tomorrow, storytelling at 7 p.m. tonight, West Virginia Storytellers are doing their second Monday stories. And I had the honor of being on their first one 2 months ago. And our buddy Mark Brew was on last month, and this month, there is a nice lineup. Adam Booth and you know what? I don't have my paper, but there's a really good lineup. David Brower, who calls himself the grandfather storyteller, because at least 50% of his tales are based on things that he and his grandson, who's I guess about 9 now, I met him when his grandson was 5. He and his grandson have these talks and walks, and David writes stories about something that comes out of them. And he also does some great ghost stories. And Katie Ross is also going to be performing in that. So at 7 o'clock, and it's open to the public, and it's free. In fact, if you don't know about the sign-in, I will send a copy of it to you.
Okay, you can do that.
Okay, and then tomorrow night, Speak Story Series, Laura Packer.
One of my favorites.
Right, and that's at 7:30. And for that, you have to go to speakstoryseries.com and register. And they will send you the link and all the details. So I think that's exciting.
And, it is pretty exciting. There's so many so many things going on. I think National Association of Black Storytellers has an event this evening, so I'm going to be torn about what I'm going to listen to, but we will make it work.
Well, since you have a husband who is a technological wizard, he could probably record one while you watch the other.
Or he could put
One in each ear.
One in each ear,
I don't.
That won't work?
Well, it would work.
I'm very good at multitasking.
Yes, I don't know if you're very good at deciphering two different people. But you might
probably
be.
Not.
Who knows? Yeah, so.
It sounds like a terrible idea.
Right. Okay, so do you have a story to tell us today?
I do. I have a story to tell you.
Okay.
And again, I want feedback. Gentle feedback.
Oh, I'm glad you put that proviso on there.
Okay.
I try to be gentle all the time.
Okay, so this story is, again, one in my series of Hagerstown downtown area personages and, well, just ordinary people telling their stories about downtown. And this one is called A Special Gift, which I imagine is also the title of the story you're going to tell later, since that's our theme today.
Right.
Okay. This is an anonymous story, yes. Yeah. Well, that's good, because I need a sign-off from several people, including my pastor, to go on the record with this story. Everyone knows me here, and we have to be careful about those relationships. If I was a visitor here downtown, I'd think this place was insane, full of crazy people. I live at the other end of town. That's close enough for me. I don't want to live so close to my job that someone I just turned down for rental assistance can see me go into my house confidentially. Sometimes it's scary crazy. I've worked downtown for the last 16 years, plus another decade at a shopping center near the city limits, so 25 years total. There's a huge difference between the two sites. On the city outskirts, I was in a secure building, a credit union, behind bulletproof glass. I never even thought about my safety. Well, once we did have a bomb threat and had to vacate the building, still there was never problems at night, and I never worried about walking to my car. Downtown, here, the day-to-day inquiries we get at the church from the street are an eye-opener. When I started here, the calls and the walk-ins were all about money, people asking for financial assistance or bus tickets, rental assistance. Our community has a good system for vetting inquiries and getting help to people who need it. United Way, Community Action Council, and the Homeless Shelter have a partnership to keep on top of things. These organizations excel at service levels and meeting needs of individuals. It's the numbers, the amount of need that overwhelms us. The church resurrected our old phone tree model just since the pandemic for people who don't or won't use the internet. You know, about a third of the 200 people we connect with each week, we try to reach by phone now. So we're calling 70 and more people each week. You can imagine what that's done to the workload, but it's just necessary. Everyone with an email address gets a message, but now we also cover the ones without email. The hard part is not knowing how many people we don't reach. We don't know how many people are in need that we can't see. We can't tell if we're connecting with everyone who needs help. We regularly find syringes and paraphernalia on our grassy areas outside. Really, that's been going on for 20 years. The difference now is that the police don't have the authority to detain people. All they can do is move them onto someone else's patch. Addictions complicate everything. We had a guy go crazy in the church building very suddenly. One minute he was fine, chatting. The next minute he was wild, attacking people. We had to call the police, and it was terrifying. waiting for them to get here, trying to keep the guy under observation and everyone out of harm's way. The police told us he was on spice. All our paid staff at the church has participated in mental health first aid training. We have Narcan training and kits to distribute to all staff. I have a kit in my purse and another in my car. So far, I haven't had to jump in. The last time, a couple weeks ago, the ambulance got there just before me. But I know if I see someone, a parent or other relative of one of our kids, I can't stand by and know that I could have saved the life of that child's parent. In 2000, that was just about the time my husband and I joined the church. The congregation made the decision to stay downtown, to expand our mission here. There was a commitment to a new vision. We started attending the church in 1997, but the actual decisions were made just before that. The city was just starting up the Arts and Entertainment District project to enhance offerings and attractions downtown, to get everyone in and around the city to shop and visit here. I used to write a column for the church newsletter and spotlight new downtown shops. I tell church members, stop by this new place and tell them you attend church here, so they know we support the downtown businesses. I was thrilled by each new enterprise. Oh, when I first came on staff here, there were so many wonderful shops. I remember Rosie's 16th birthday, my granddaughter's birthday. I took her to 6 or 7 different amazing shops. 1-2 Kangaroo, a toy store. Blue Sky Gifts, Maggie's Hang-Ups. That was a framing shop full of art for sale. The arrangement for that day, for her birthday, was Rosie could spend $10 on a gift from each of the shops we visited. That was her birthday present. It was a memorable day. We had so much fun. I remember she had trouble deciding between 2 special finds in one of the shops. So we went to lunch at the Gourmet Goat so she could think it over. Oh my, I just realized that was a full decade ago. We just celebrated her 26th birthday the other day. And in fact, when I just saw Rosie for her birthday, social distancing, of course, she spoke of her memories of that day. She remembers me introducing her to the shop owners and how they were pleased to meet her. And clearly, I knew a lot of people downtown, even people on the street stopping to chat. She remembered feeling safe because she was with me. She said people kept saying what a good person I was. I guess she didn't know that till then. She still has a pink bracelet she bought that day and a miniature baking set complete with a mini cookie tray. These were all just small trinkets, but they meant something to her because she met the shop owners with me. I introduced her to every shop owner we met. There was the cloak and cupboard on the square corner. I'd already bought a set of vintage paper dolls for every one of my grandchildren there. And then we went to the Arts Council store and met the council director. We had ice cream at Bones and Cones. The ice cream place that also sold dog treats. And I introduced Rosie to the mother-daughter team that ran that store. Basket full of gifts? Marge, the owner, made up gift baskets. Oh, Marge was a talker. We were in there forever. I thought, Rosie will turn 17 before we get out of here. But Rosie loved her. And Lola, one of the few African-American shop owners downtown. She had the consignment shop on Potomac Street. It was a lovely little boutique, but really supporting the community through targeted recycling and resale. Lola is still active in the community. I loved that shop myself. Oh, and that flaming redhead. Laura was her name. Bright red lipstick. A tour de force in her own right. She's an accountant now, but at that time, She took over the Lena Darner dress shop and updated it. She would do special orders for her customers. A lot of people were devastated when she closed up shop. Those stores are all gone now, every single one, in just 10 years. I was on various committees related to revitalizing downtown, but I was working daily with kids, many whose families once lived downtown, but now lived all over the county. I could see that these people, adults and children, were becoming less and less connected to the city. My granddaughter was one of those people. I thought, if we can get the kids more comfortable with the shops and shop owners, that would change how they felt about downtown. But you know what? Now Rosie says she wouldn't go downtown. She remembers that wonderful birthday. But the last time she was in town and saw all those stores are gone, nothing to replace them, she would have no reason to go back, she said. That just broke my heart. I struggle to be even remotely positive about the future. The first time I participated in a revitalization committee, I was so enthusiastic, but now I'm getting burned out after 5 or 7 different revitalization cycles. Everyone's discouraged. I'm not an economic developer. It's hard to know where the barriers are. Maybe we've shifted our culture, a society of everyone out for himself. Maybe it's partly county versus city. When I worked with the leadership training group, I just loved the camaraderie, the energy. I thought, we do have what it takes to turn this community around. And then one of the last speakers in the series was asked what he thought our chances were to make a difference and change the trajectory. He said, without a sense of pride, you cannot create community. If you aren't proud of your city, if you can't imagine anyone wanting to come here, then you've owned a backwater identity. That was a blow. But there are hopeful signs, real collaborations working together. The faith community works very well together. The new rabbis leading the interfaith group this year. And check out United Way Facebook postings for the past year. It's about what the homeless shelter can do, what Goodwill has agreed to do. United Way, in partnership with a couple other organizations, pulled together more than 50 kids, volunteers that contribute every week. Thank goodness for kids. Next step is cohesive forward movement for adults, being ready to say, here's what we can offer. Do you know about art camps? We've recruited people who have the time and resources to give to children. We bring them into the kitchen or into a mixed arts environment at the church. We're adding a young authors group and work with them to get their stories on paper. And then they illustrate them, watercolors and other materials. It's interesting. We focused on serving children in need, but the whole community has turned out. We have a very diverse group of kids. Parents come to volunteer and bring their kids too. Some of the youngest originally are now up into their teens. It's been really gratifying. We're right on the edge of the downtown's arts and entertainment district, so the art camps seem the natural fruition of years of meeting with the summer arts festivals, the arts high school, the children's museum. The key has been making sure our congregation understands what and how all that's going on downtown impacts each of us directly and indirectly. Getting choked up telling you about this because I have this fierce hope. What might we become if we use that stone soup model? I know you tell that stone soup story. What if we each put into a pot the items we have in abundance that nourish and grow our community? What could or would businesses, organizations, families, individuals contribute physically, emotionally, and spiritually to the benefit of us all, how would we dip and serve? You can call me crazy, but that's my hope, that we practice celebrating our abundance.
All right. That was good. That was good.
So you like that better than the first version that you heard a couple of weeks ago?
Well, I couldn't recognize it as anywhere.
That's right.
Truly, I was scratching my head. And and you couldn't hear me scratching my head because I had my mic
muted.
You know?
Are you a noisy head scratcher?
Oh, no, I don't think so. But I'm pretty noisy all the time. So anyway,
well, first tell me how I did on time. Tell me about time. I think it was 12.
I think about 12 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. It might, you know, I think so. But I liked it very much. There were lots of nice things there. I have some questions. And you want to do it now or?
Sure.
Okay. So I like this. The thing about taking granddaughter around to stores and without being too long, pointing out stuff about the different shops and everything, and even though it's like negative and kind of sad about the stores not being there anymore, the way you told it was nice because stores do go in and out in places. And especially in these days, you practically have to start with the gold medal store, and you know, with all the publicity and background and stuff, in order to stay. You know, opening a small store in a town like Hagerstown is a difficult proposition. You have to build up a clientele, and they have to keep it. You know what they say: keep it new each day, and the description of the I wrote down as you were telling, are the stores still there? But you mentioned no, they're not. So you know, and even though that's a kind of a downer in the story, it's not really a downer because it's just a fact. And you're talking about a difficult subject there. something real neat, I think, is when the people told your granddaughter. Her granddaughter, how nice she was, and you put in, I guess she didn't know that. That's a great line because it's you know that gave the lady a really nice personality, you know, for her to say that. That whole thing, the description of the granddaughter was nice. Oh boy, let's see. What are the kid? She mentioned kid volunteers. That there were a bunch of kid volunteers in, and what were they doing?
They work on special projects. So, like during the pandemic, they've been collecting supplies. And
oh, I see. Okay.
Them.
Right.
I think they work with younger kids. Some of them do tutoring.
Right.
Really, it really depends on what the kids identify as a need and what they
right.
have the energy. But it's a really well-organized group. That's what
right.
the
and,
tellers.
And I think I missed who's leading that.
The United Way in conjunction with some other organizations.
Okay. Well, and that's my fault because I'm sure you mentioned it, but I didn't write it down right away, and then I got involved. And the arts group with what the kids are doing.
The art camps, uh-huh.
Yeah, art camps. Does that have a name other than art camps?
I think it's just the church's art camps. I haven't heard another name. I did a little bit of work with them.
Right.
And I just associated with the church. And I can't mention the church specifically, but it's just the art camps.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That you can't mention the church.
Well, because I mean, I could mention the church in passing, but I can't mention the church as the source of the interview, because the promise to the tellers is that they will be anonymous.
Anonymous, right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, I like this. I liked it very much. A lot of positive in it, and it told the story.
What do you think about where the should the second half of the story be the shopping trip, or is it okay that?
I think the shopping trip was fine early on.
Okay.
Yeah, I think because that's in the past, mm-hmm. and it's something that she would like to see happen again.
Okay.
For other people, if that was mentioned as, it would be nice if lots of grandmothers and granddaughters or lots of relatives could take children to six different shops that they might be interested in and not just toys. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever things, because that was a nice bit. I think it's very nice.
Okay.
That is interesting. I liked that it was positive.
Yeah, I worked on that.
Yeah. So, you've been listening to Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, with Stacy Okalski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-hosts. And you just heard Fanny talking about one of the interviews she's done in preparation for an incredible program that she's going to be performing sometime in the relatively near future.
I hope it becomes credible.
Well,
at some point.
I think it will.
But thank you for your feedback, Stosh. That was,
you're very welcome.
That was good stuff. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You, in spite of sometimes what you say, I would have a hard time thinking of any performance you've done that I didn't like.
Aw.
So.
Well, you know the feeling's mutual.
Well, yes.
I guess that's why we do this radio show together.
Boy, it would be difficult to do a radio show with someone you didn't care about and you didn't, feel some companionship with and share a lot of ideas.
Yeah. I don't know why anyone would do that.
I don't know, but you can find lots of them. Go on YouTube, you can find lots of two people broadcast things who have call-in shows. And sometimes it seems, I've had that question in my mind. Why are they working together? they could be married and do a better job of representing that institution, I guess, you know. So anyway, I think that was very, very well done.
You're going to tell us a story.
I'm going to tell you a story.
Maybe more than one.
Probably not. We're 38 minutes into the show.
Okay.
But what I'd like to do is discuss a story I've been fooling with for many years, never told, because I think what I need is, on this date, at this time, you're expected to tell the story, so you better get it done. And this is, to me, is very important, and it's a story from. It has so many parts. That's one of the things that's amazing about this. There is a play called Life in a Jar. There are a number of books titled Life in a Jar. And I became aware of this marvelous, almost saintly woman who was not a saint. but who did an incredible thing during the Second World War. Irina Sendler became important to me while I was teaching at Frederick High School. And I came across a little comment in a newspaper. And I don't even remember what newspaper it was, but about a group of teenagers, three girls in Kansas, who had written this play called Life in a Jar. And it fascinated me because I've done a lot of theater. I've written some plays. And it just fascinated me because this was a history project. Their teacher gave the class a project about doing something, finding something that other people are not aware of and coming up with describe it, illustrate it, bring it to the people, to the class's attention. And so these girls, who eventually became very close, they discovered Irina Sendler, a story of a woman during the Second World War in Poland, who was a social worker, sometimes a nurse, but the nurse part was kind of pretend, but she did have some training. And she, over a period of a few years, managed to smuggle 2,500 children, Jewish children, out of the Warsaw Ghetto and place them in orphanages and with Polish families. And the title Life in a Jar comes from the fact that these were Jewish children, mostly babies, not all babies, but many very young children. The details of how she got them out of the ghetto. She was allowed to go in and out of the ghetto because she was a social worker nurse, and she did things with the people in there, thousands of people locked up in that ghetto, which was and reading about it is enough to make you cry. The hardest heart would not be able to read descriptions of how the people lived there. And Irina knew that there was no hope for the people in the ghetto. She worked with an underground group, and she knew that the people in the ghetto were going to be sent away to camps and they were going to die. She also knew that the babies there were going to be treated the same way. And it's true that thousands of young children and babies were killed by the Nazi regime in the camps. And so I can't even imagine this. I was a salesman, door-to-door salesman. And compared to what she did, I had people almost giving me money. And she convinced parents of these Jewish children to give the babies to her, and she would find a home for them and place them with, in most cases, in just about every case, Catholic families. Now, I can't imagine the turmoil in a mother's mind to give up an infant and know that the infant was going to be raised by somebody not even in the same faith. But Irina was able to convince many of these parents, and she gave the babies to willing families, and to orphanages. There were a couple of orphanages that she took the children to. And she kept records of their name, their birth date, and some information about their parents. And she stored that information in jars that were buried in a yard near a friend's house. And after the war, she and the group she worked with were able to get those jars. Some of the names, unfortunately, were lost because of moisture and things, but most of them were still available, and she had the record of where those children went, and she was able to provide that to families who wanted to find those children. There are many, many stories out of this of people who eventually found where the infant went, were able to trace them down. Many of those children did not remember their parents at all because they were so young. And many of them were even baptized in a new religion and given new names. And so some of them actually did not know that they weren't with their real family because, a 6 month or 8 month old baby, even a 2 year old who is raised by a family for 15, 18, 20 years, probably would not remember anything about being an infant. Well, most people don't remember the first 2 years of their life, except for one or two minor things. And so, anyway, I became fascinated that there is a play called Life in a Jar, written by these three girls as a history project, that it so impressed their teacher that he joined with them, and they began looking for Irina. And they found her in Poland, where she was not well known for what she had done. But through the efforts of these girls and supported by their teacher, a wonderful book, the first wonderful book and the play was put together. The girls eventually were able to go to Poland and meet Irina. Now, when they did, she was in her 90s. And she died in 2008. She was born in 1910. So she was 90 years old when she died. And in the latter part of her life, she was recognized by a great many people and received some awards. And she was a simple woman. She had three children of her own, was married for about, I think, 11 years after the war. And there was an attempt to nominate her for the Peace Prize, Nobel Peace Prize. But unfortunately, that came too late because the Nobel Committee doesn't recognize anyone who's deceased. And so, anyway, reading about these girls, going to Poland and meeting her and writing this play, and the play continues to be performed. You can go on the internet right now and find dates and places where it will be performed in 2021. other performances that were scheduled for now in 2020 have been put off or postponed, in some cases canceled because of the coronavirus pandemic. The adventures that this woman went through were beyond heroic. She didn't just get children out of the ghetto. She brought them out in bizarre ways. She sometimes took a dog with her, and she worked with the dog so that she could instantly get the dog to bark. And if she had a baby in the back of the ambulance that she often used to go into the ghetto, or someone's truck where she had some supplies she was giving to people, if the baby was fussy, she would set the dog off. And she had to go through checkpoints, and frequently she set the dog off, and the dog would be barking and raising a fuss, and so, you know, the soldiers at the checkpoint didn't want to bother fooling around with looking in there with this dog. And she used all kind of ways. She found passageways in buildings that had a secret exit out of the ghetto, away from any of the checkpoints, and used one of those a number of times until once she found it was closed and realized it had been discovered, and so she had to find other ways. She was put in prison. Perhaps she was someone told on her, or someone else found out information. They had an organization that she became part of, and the code name was Yolanta. And she was identified as being this person. They came to her apartment, took her away. She was tortured. Her legs were damaged. The description of her time in the prison is pretty awful. And she was condemned to death. Part of the story, of course, is not in formal, orders written by the Germans or this or that, but she was in a group of people who were lined up and were being taken out of a building where they had been in this prison to be executed. They were going to be taken into the woods on the side of the building. Apparently, someone in the organization was able to convince someone in that prison, a guard who was going to be on that detail, probably with a bribe of money, because the ruthless Nazi soldiers were human beings, and some of them could be bought. Some of them could be, you know, you could give them enough money that they would look the other way at times for different things. As this line of people, women, were being taken out of this prison, walking down a hallway towards the door that was being opened for them to be taken out, Irina was the last in line. And the guard at the back of the line, seconds before they got to a hallway that turned away from their direction, leaned forward and said to her, "Go down the hallway, get out of here, leave," and never another word. And without a thought until later, she said once in an interview that she wondered if she was going to be shot in the back, you know, that the guard was just playing a trick on her. But she went to the side hallway, and once she realized no one was following her, she made a dash to the first door she could find, and it led to the opposite side of the building, and she escaped into the woods and eventually was able to get back to some of the people that she worked with in her group. At first, she wasn't sure how that had happened. She just thought maybe the guard was, became a good person instantly or something, that it was some almost a miracle. But information that I read about this is that somebody paid off the guard. And that guard did take a chance, because if she had been caught escaping, he would have probably suffered also. So this story fascinated me so much that I bought copies of the story on a CD and a DVD, and I gave it to a number of schools that I had worked at, and just said if they were, you know, that they might be interested in seeing this. And also I did, there is a DVD, a movie made of this story, starring Anna Paquin, who is a well-known actress in Hollywood and has been in many good pictures. And it is fascinating. So my hope is that sometime I will get a chance to perform this story in a certainly a better chronological way and tell the story. But there are so many things to it that it would be hard to do it as a 15-minute story, because part of the story is about these high school girls, these heroines, who managed to resurrect the story of Irina Sendler. And that's my story.
Sash, I have so many questions. This is such a wonderful story.
We have probably 4 minutes.
Okay, well, here's a storyteller question.
Right.
If you think about the motifs in this story, you've been working with Cengiz Alka's writings and her stories.
Right.
What makes this such a great story? What are the almost mythic elements here that just grab us?
For me, I taught school for 4 years. I had many, many good students who did assignments and went out of their way to do projects and things. But to imagine three girls in Kansas, you think Kansas like as a farm place and stuff, and these three girls coming up with finding this person and deciding this would be interesting to do a project for their history teacher. And it blossomed into them eventually going to Poland and got me.
Well, okay, so you're saying it's a journey story. It's about these kids.
Yes. That's incredible.
See this, they get an inkling that there's a treasure out there,
right.
And they go and search.
Right.
Wow.
And they actually visited with her and stayed there for a number of days. When my wife and I went to Poland in 2016, I was able to talk to some people about Irina Sendler, but I wasn't able to do anything like I would if I wasn't on a a tour, because there I couldn't just stop the tour for a day.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a bus tour, 46 other people, and we visited lots of cities, but I did get to see things in Warsaw, and I got to see some places that had her, made recognition of her. And she is regarded as a very special person in Poland. And because of my Polish background, I became very interested in her. And her middle name was Stanisława.
Ah. Oh.
And her father's name was Stanisław, which is my name. And anyway, I think the I would love to continue working on this story and develop it into a full performance.
It's going to be wonderful. It is. It's a great story, and this and the packaged by the girls, you know, it just it's stunning.
Mm-hmm.
We're out of time, though.
Yes, we are. I hope someday to be able to see the play.
Yeah, I would be too.
So.
Keep us posted.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to close out storytelling for this week. This is Fanny Crawford
and Stasi Olkowski
closing out the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org in Bolivar, West Virginia, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for...